Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
That's right, it's time for your Owl Post. It is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, the phenomenal Drea Kaufman. How are you doing?
Good. I'm also apparently the reason that Matt doesn't get to work out.
No. So. Not you. The reason is Owl Post. So, Yes, I'm suffering from too much of the Weasleys' special candies, and it's all my fault and Owl Post, so we're blaming it on the podcast. But
really, it's both of our incredibly busy schedules and making the magic happen every week, y'all. Not just on the podcast, but just with the scheduling of the podcast.
Yeah.
I really think we're wizards, and our just letters got lost.
I wish, you know, it would be so much easier to clean things. And, like, this has nothing to do with the episode in the sense of the chapter, but wouldn't it be so great to be able to, like, make your house bigger with magic?
It would, and not have to move, like,
yeah.
Ever. Or even if you did, you could use magic to pack. That would be amazing.
Oh, it would be amazing. And I'm just thinking, like, you could rent a one-bedroom apartment, but inside the apartment is actually like a 12 bedroom apartment, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if the
is this
tent...
Harry Potter or Doctor Who?
Well, I'm just saying, if the tent can have like a larger size than the outside, then if it can be bigger on the inside than the outside, can't your house?
I feel like we could talk about this at great length, but that's
anyway,
not why we're here.
Yes, no, we're not. but, of course, you can find Owl Post wherever you get your podcast. Help us out. Give us a star rating and review over there on iTunes or Apple Podcasts. You can also find us online at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. If you'd like to send us an email, go over to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Owl Post, and then that comes to Drea and I. So we're in chapter 32, Out of the Fire, and Harry wakes up in the Great Hall, and the professor that is administering the test is like, are you okay? And Harry's just like, I'm fine. And he's like, no, I don't need to go to the emergency room. Basically, I don't need to go over to the hospital wing. I just need to find Professor McGonagall. And so he runs, and she is not there in the hospital wing because, well, she's been transferred to St. Mungo's. So Harry feels very lost at this moment as what to do, which. I really like that they add that this is in the chapter that isn't in the movie, because it does show you that Harry does look first for an adult to talk to.
Well, and this kind of adds to the severity, because he goes on to kind of be like, there's no more support at the school. Like they paint, he's like, there's no one else in the Order of the Phoenix left at the school that he can go to. It kind of adds to the hopelessness that we've sort of been building throughout this book, and the fact that, you know, first it was Dumbledore and then it was Hagrid and now it's McGonagall. Like, there's just nobody else that Harry trusts left. And yeah, but I agree. I like that he goes looking for an adult. First thinking that, you know, the first thing you think when you see the movie is like, why didn't he get an adult involved? Well, he tries. And then he goes and he's like, the only people left at the school that he truly trusts are Ron and Hermione. And he goes to find them and tell them what he saw.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the thing that really stands out to me, though, is it does show, I felt like at this moment, it did show a little bit of growth in Harry, where I felt like in other places, he might immediately have just run to Ron and Hermione, whereas here he immediately runs for the senior adult that he knows, the one that could help him the most, which is McGonagall, and of course she is already gone. And so telling Ron and Hermione this, Ron is buying what Harry's laying down, but Hermione, not so much. And she finally challenges him on a question that I guess maybe a lot of people have wanted to ask Harry. And it is an interesting thing that she kind of, but I mean, she basically accuses Harry of being a people saver.
He has the savior complex.
Yeah.
Yeah. That he always feels like everything is dire and he needs to save it. And it's kind of all his responsibility. But I kind of, so she throws that out there and he responds and, you know, Ron kind of takes a back seat, kind of defends him a little bit, you know, and Hermione doesn't challenge that anything he's not doing is brave or noble, but whether it always needed to be him. But then I like how the conversation sort of evolves as they're talking and says something to the effect of, but don't you know, don't you think that Voldemort knows that too? Like, that's a known quality about you. Don't you think he knows that too? And I feel like she's sort of alluding less to the fact that, like, Harry's making this up and more that maybe it's not real.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think she doesn't quite feel that it's a real thing. But at the same time, I was thinking about this as I was reading the chapter, and I came to the realization that something that Hermione does not think about in this moment, and the reason that Harry is so urgent about this is the very last member of Harry's family.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yes, Voldemort
of what
has...
Harry thinks Harry's family
exactly,
is.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you know, that I mean, this is his godfather. This is the only one he has left connected to his parents that was meant to be the person to kind of be there for him. And so, yes, Voldemort has chosen wisely to pick Sirius. And of course, Harry's going to do everything he can to want to save him. And so one of the things I thought was really nice about this is that Hermione tries to make her point here, but at the same time, she also says, look, why don't we do this? And she has this idea given to her because Ginny walks in, as well as Luna, because they notice that, and they've heard Harry yelling at Ron and Hermione because of this conversation. And this is the moment where I think Hermione comes up with a genius idea that she's able to sell Harry on, that shows him that she's on his side, but that she gets him to maybe slow down just enough to try something before we go running off blindly to London.
She has a trust but verify plan, is what I like to think of it as. She wants to trust him. She trusts that something's wrong, but she needs to verify it for herself and for everyone's sake before they just rush off and do something brash, like leave school while they're like highly, highly visible.
Yes. And I think that's the thing that, I really love the moment is they're making this plan with Ginny and Luna and with Ron, how they're going to, you know, draw Umbridge away from her office, and they're going to keep people away from that corridor by telling this funny story about this gas going off and everything, and the fact that Hermione is going to be the one that goes with Harry, and Harry realizes that this is Hermione's way of showing him loyalty, of, you know, of basically saying, yes, she's on his side.
Right. I'll go with you and risk expulsion or getting caught so that you, because you know that's important to me to do something that I'm asking you to do and prove it's important to you. Like, it is. It's a good, fair sort of balance. It gives them both the right level of compromise and risk. It's a really good compromise, even if Harry kind of doesn't feel so. And so I really like that. And we kind of brushed over it right at the beginning, but this chapter is very short, and this chapter only really focuses on like two things. And it's one, realizing McGonagall's not there and there are no other allies of theirs, adult allies of theirs at the school. And two, this plan that Hermione comes up with and the fact that, you know, she needs to verify. And the only way that we know how is using Umbridge's fireplace. So very, very short and to the point. So, but they come up with that really interesting plan. And I love that she kind of points out in this super short chapter that when Ginny recommends, oh, well, you know, we'll act like there's this gas and tell people to go the other way. And she was super fast with her recommendation, and that Hermione like looks at her super surprised, and that there's a few moments here that, you know, Ginny kind of reminds them of Fred and George. And she's like, what they were going to do before they left. I just used their plan. Like, I just love that even though Fred and George aren't there, they're there. They're there in spirit. And it's just a cute little nod to that.
Well, and it what I thought is kind of fun about it too is it gives you a little bit of insight to, you know, who Ginny is as a character by showing you that all of her brothers are really kind of rubbed off on her in different ways. Like, and the fact that she does kind of have this more mischievous part to her character like her brothers do, and that doesn't really come out a ton, but here, you know, she already knew what they were planning, and it's like you wonder, there's a part of me that would love to kind of see even more of this from her side, and just how much she maybe hung out with Fred and George that we didn't really know about. So I think that would be cool.
Less that she hung out with them, and I feel like it's more that she has played this part in the family. She's the girl. She's kind of been a shadow. They don't really. It reminds me a lot of kind of Arya Stark in Game of Thrones, but like they don't really notice she's there. They don't really realize she's listening. They don't really realize she's picking up these things and doing them different or better or incorporating them. I feel like. It's not that they're mean to her or anything like that. I think she's just the little sister, and so they don't really think about it. And next thing you know, here she is with this brilliant plan that she sort of gleaned from everywhere. And I found it as this, like, she's just so smart. And then instead of getting hurt about being the shadow, she's like, well, I'm just going to be super brilliant about it. So, you know, that's what I am. And I love that we get this little glimpse of this. She's got that twinkle in her eye the whole chapter. So it's nice.
Yeah, I mean, there's something that's really cool about that in the sense that, I mean, she is the girl in the family of all boys. And, you know, she has never made excuses why she can't be brilliant and why she can't be awesome. And, you know, she doesn't seem to care if they, you know, wouldn't always let her play. You know, like, she's just not a complainer, and she's not one that uses anything as an excuse in her life. She's used it all to make herself better. You know, like, it's one of those places where you kind of see that, you know, hardship makes people better people if they choose to be, and Ginny has chosen to take some of the hardships she probably had as a kid, which is being the only girl, and use them to her benefit. Instead of just like whining about it and, you know, not doing anything. And I that's really commendable too.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a balance and a reflection too on a similar situation with Harry where he's had really crappy situation. I mean, his is a much different situation, but in the same way, taking it made him stronger, more compassionate, better at what he does. You know, it's given him a new perspective. Same thing for her, just in it with a different circumstance. So it's really interesting that she's really focusing on this dichotomy of the circumstances don't define who you become. You can take bad circumstances or circumstances that you don't like and learn from them and grow and be bigger and better and a better version of yourself. And this is just another character she's doing that with kind of a different story. So it's really nice, but I like that we get a lot of Ginny in this chapter and in the next couple.
Yeah, me too. You know, it's really interesting too when they are using the fire and they nobody else answers the fire call except for Creature, and he's not very helpful at all.
Shock.
Yeah, and the last thing they really hear before they get pulled out of the fire abruptly is that Master is not going to be coming back from the Department of Ministries. In fact, Creature and his mistress will be alone again, which, talk about creepy. So it seems to confirm the fact that Sirius is at the Department of Ministries with Voldemort.
Right, and that nobody else was there either, which is so strange. You don't hear often that there's no one there. But before they have an opportunity to ask more questions or try maybe the Weasley house or something along those lines, they're pulled out of the fire. And I like the description as they come out is that he kind of tastes smoke and ash and as he's kind of being ripped out of the fire. And then we find that Umbridge and her inquisitorial squad have found them.
This is the moment, you know, they've captured everybody. They've got Ron, Ginny, Luna, and Neville all captured. And this is where she begins to interrogate them about, you know, who were you trying to get in touch with? Was it Albus Dumbledore? You know, was it Hagrid? Was it McGonagall? And she isn't getting anything from them. And so she sends Draco to get Snape. And immediately Harry remembers that there was a member of the Order of the Phoenix here, and it was Snape. And of course he didn't remember it was Snape because, well, why would you?
I just remember thinking when they were like, there's no one left. I'm like, I'm pretty sure Snape's still there. Snape's still there? Eh, whatever. I remember thinking that to myself when they started talking about like, oh, there's no one left. I was like, I thought Snape was still around somewhere. But I was like, eh, who cares? Like, who cares about Snape?
Yeah, what use is he going to be?
Well, and it's like, and along those lines, you know, I was like, oh, well, but they don't trust him, especially Harry doesn't trust him. And, you know, Snape's never given him reason to trust him and given him reason to think he would even believe Harry. So in his mind, he doesn't count. But I do like in this moment where he's like, oh, there was someone. Like, you could just feel that, like, oh, man, wash over him.
Yeah, I really appreciated that, that he remembered that, you know. And I think, you know, the thing about that moment is Harry... Harry will use that in a second, but what I love too is that we learn a lot of things in this chapter about what Umbridge has been responsible for. One, she wants Veretti serum because that is what she used to interrogate Harry and all of his friends about their activities, and that's what she used on everyone, and so that's the reason that she was able to get the young girl to talk. Was you realize it wasn't her fault. She couldn't help it. She drank the tea and, you know, what are you going to do?
It also explains why Harry didn't want to drink the tea and confirms that he was right in not drinking the tea when she was asking him about Dumbledore and all of that. We also learn in this whole thing that that she is actually the one who sent the Dementors after Harry at the beginning of the book over the summer. And she had hoped that they would take care of him and discredit him so that, you know, that the discreditation would continue and be validated and the ministry could be right and rid of him as like this pest. And so they were actually acting on ministry orders, and it was Umbridge's orders.
And I think that's the thing here in this chapter that just kind of scares the living poop out of me, you know? Like, it's just the fact that you see that she's so willing, that the ministry is so hell-bent on nobody sharing their...
influence.
Their influence, yeah. But the actual truth about what happened... is just so scary. And, you know, we see she says all this because she's about to use the Cruciatus curse on Harry to get answers from him.
Because she used all the truth serum and Snape tells her it takes like a whole month to make. And the whole time that's happening, Harry is trying to send a message to Snape using Occlumency, but he's so bad at it. We don't know if it's working.
Yes. And... there is a moment where he is able to say something to Snape in code, but he, because of the relationship they have, he has no idea if it's made any difference to Snape.
Right. If Snape understood it, would believe him, would know what to do or could do anything, you know, he just kind of blurts it out as he does in the movie. And then, you know, Snape leaves him with Umbridge. And right before she goes to use the Cruciatus curse, you know, Hermione jumps in and says, you know, we were trying to get a hold of Dumbledore. We were supposed to tell him about this weapon. And she does such a great job of kind of stammering her way through this and being very afraid, but lying through her teeth, while doing it, which is not something we've ever seen Hermione do. And so, you know, she convinces Umbridge there's this weapon and that it's hidden, and they were trying to tell Dumbledore, but they don't know what it is or anything about it. And then convinces her that the students could use it against her. So Umbridge should go alone with them.
Yeah, that's the part that I kind of love, is that she's really smart in the way that she's like, oh, yeah, we could have everybody come, and then they can see this weapon, and then they can use it against you. And that hits Umbridge pretty hard, actually. And she's like, okay, let's go. She takes Harry and Hermione with her, and they head out of the castle, and that's where we leave the chapter.
And she leaves Malfoy and Crabbe and someone else with Ginny and Luna and Neville, which Neville just kind of joins in here. He was just around, wanted to help out. And I love that. I love the fact that he was just there and he wants to do something. And it just, it's one of those like perfect Neville moments where you're like, I just love that you're around. You just want to be there and help.
Yeah. It's good stuff. You know, this is obviously everything now is just snowballing. I mean, we are just headed rapidly towards the end. But of course, you know, that is where the chapter ends. So everybody will have to wait till next week to see what else happens. And Drea, if people did want to catch up with you, where can they find you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman. And it's Kaufman.
And you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Vero under the same name, MattRushing02. I'm here in the network, also doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills. I hope you'll check that out. If you are a Star Wars fan, that is the place for you. We just have a great time talking Star Wars every week. I'm on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One is called The Orb with Chris Jones as we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Drea is actually going to be with us next week on the 602 Club as we talk about Stranger Things. So, yes, if you love yourself some Stranger Things or anything else geeky, please head up the 602 Club. You'll love it. We talk about all the fandoms we love. And then last but not least, you can find me doing cinema stories with my good friend Courtney, talking about film through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.